is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Andrei Bezrukhov, a.k.a. Donald Howard Heathfield, a.k.a. Defendant Number 4. Elena Vavilova, a.k.a. Tracy Leanne Foley, a.k.a. Defendant Number 5. They are, of course, the Cambridge spy couple. They're back in Russia now, but their lawyers will be here with us today. They won't violate any attorney-client privilege, but they will take us behind the scenes of the cloak-and-dagger diplomacy that seemed part farce, part fast-moving foreign policy chess game that led to the biggest U.S.-Russia spy swap since the Cold War. They'll join us a little later in the show, and you'll definitely want to stay tuned for that. But first, as it's Friday, we begin with our Week in Review.
Because of this reform, the American people will never again be asked to foot the bill for Wall Street's mistakes. There will be no more taxpayer-funded bailouts. Period.
President Barack Obama, just after the Senate passed a landmark financial reform bill with a little help from Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown. And in Bay State economic news, Governor Deval Patrick chooses to accentuate the positive.
We are in Massachusetts on demand and on the move.
As the latest unemployment numbers tick down to 9%, the lowest level in 9 months, but the governor's rivals say that doesn't eliminate the negative reality that more than 300,000 Massachusetts residents are still out of work. But could some of those people be put back to work if this guy comes to town?
The only way to win in a casino
is to own one. Unless you're very lucky.
News that Las Vegas casino mogul Steve Wynn has his eye on South Boston stirs up what appears to be a deadlocked legislative conference committee on expanded gambling in Massachusetts. So that's the Week in Review this week. Who would have thought there was so much to talk about in the middle of the summer, but there is. So, listeners, are you relieved that the financial reform bill is finally on its way to passage or to being signed by President Barack Obama? What do you make of Scott Brown's pivotal role here? Is he acting on behalf of Massachusetts or acting on behalf of, say, State Street Bank? And on casinos, did you think the years-long battle was behind us, or could a gambling bill remain stuck in Beacon Hill purgatory? If so, would that thrill or frustrate you? What is your big story of the week? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now for this week's Week in Review is Susan Tracy. She's a former Boston State representative and president of the Strategy Group, a media consulting agency. Susan Tracy, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Also with us is Peter Canellos. He's editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Welcome back, Peter.
Thanks, Meghna.
All right, well, let's start off with that big financial reform bill that indeed did pass the Senate by a vote of 60-39 just yesterday. Of course, Senator Brown, one of only three Republicans to back the bill, including two from Maine, Senator Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins. But of course, one of the main architects of the bill was also a Massachusetts legislator, Congressman Barney Frank. Here he is speaking on NECN.
It came out better than I thought it would in the sense that it has the strongest set of consumer protections we've ever adopted in America in terms of protecting people against bad investments by imposing a serious duty on the people who sell them, on giving consumer protections over credit cards and all financial transactions.
So Peter Canellos, Barney Frank, they're kind of sounding like he's impressing himself that the bill came out better than he thought it would. But of course, Scott Brown is the linchpin here. So how do you think Brown makes out in the eyes of Massachusetts voters?
Well, I think that Massachusetts voters see him as a conciliator and probably approve of the role that he played. I mean, they, you know, kind of elected him to be a bit of a check on some Democratic enthusiasms, but not to be a total block on things. And he's been true to that mandate. Whether his role in this was entirely positive or not is another question, because, you know, he was the one who sort of single-handedly blocked the bank tax, which would have paid for it, and so instead it's being paid for out of paid-back TARP money.
Which is essentially taxpayer money.
Yeah, taxpayer money. Essentially, it probably would have been stronger with the banks themselves paying for it. But Scott Brown does deserve credit for not taking a an absolute block everything kind of position on mm-hmm. this.
Susan Tracy, I mean, do you see eye to eye with Peter there that it's not clear what Brown's motivation might have been, nor is it clear if the bill overall is positive or negative?
Well, I will tell you, I'm a Democrat. I was with Martha Coakley, but I will say that I think Scott Brown did a really masterful job, and I think he's been handling his position masterfully. I mean, he's made himself either, as I think his one of his aides said, either the 41st vote or the 60th vote, depending upon what's needed. He's played a role. He changed some of the language in that bill, and I agree with you, Peter. You might you know, one could quibble over whether you like the changes or not, but to be a senator who's only been there for a few months who actually affected change in the bill, some of it to protect Massachusetts companies, I think overall it's a real win for him.
It seems, though, that maybe some people on the left here in Massachusetts, when you say, you mentioned protecting Massachusetts companies. I mean, we had someone on the show just this week who said that effectively makes him the senator for State Street Bank and not necessarily Massachusetts. So he's taking criticism on that side.
I don't disagree with you, but he's never going to win the far left. And so what he needs to win is the middle and to kind of keep his Republican base at least not crazy. Now, if you look at his Facebook page, you might say he's in trouble.
Okay. Well, you know, obviously we mentioned the two other Republican senators who voted for the bill, Maine Senators Olympia Snow and Susan Collins. Here's Connecticut Senator Chris Dodd, the bill's Maine sponsor, acknowledging the role of these three Yankee Republicans on the floor of the Senate.
And then, of course, in the case of our two colleagues from Maine and our colleague from Massachusetts, have taken an awful lot of abuse in the last number of weeks because they worked with us on the bill, made significant contributions, and while they don't agree with every dotted I and crossed T, as I don't with this bill, decided that our country would be better off with the passage of this legislation than not.
Peter Canellos, you know, I kind of threw out that phrase Yankee Republican there, but we were bandying it about here at the Radio Boston office all day today, wondering if it's genuinely true, if we're seeing sort of an old school brand of Republican being the new moderate in the party.
Well, they've always been the moderates, or at least in the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, the Northeasterners have been the moderates. The real question with Scott Brown when he was elected was, you know, was he going to play that role or was he going to be something much, much more conservative? Because you heard him out there saying, I'd be the 41st vote against health care reform. And I think some of his supporters actually expected him to be more conservative. So, you know, clearly he's made the decision that, yes, he's going to follow that Yankee moderate role and he's going to vote like Susan Collins or Olympia Snow. And I think that's smart decision. I agree with Susan on that, that politically it positions himself much better in Massachusetts to be doing that than to be sort of Senator No. And he's handled it well.
You know, it's another observation on that that I found really interesting this week was when you looked at the money that he raised. And more importantly than the amount, which was staggering.
$1 million in just 3 months.
Yeah, staggering amount of money. I think he has $6 million cash on hand. But I think these numbers are right. When he ran for the special election, I think 80% of his money came from out of state. The vast majority of that million came from in-state, and I think that's really interesting.
But I do think it's important, though, for listeners to know that, you know, Massachusetts obviously is a center of financial services. And so sometimes, in this case, what's good for Massachusetts companies is not necessarily what's good for either consumers or for the larger economy. So, you know, when we say, isn't it great Scott Brown's raising money in state?
I didn't say it was great. I'm just observing it.
No, but I mean, but you might get the idea that he's beloved by his constituents and they're showering him with appreciation. In fact, this is probably a very special interest constituency that's contributing in state.
Well, actually, Peter, I mean, you mentioned that we might be a little incorrect in saying he's beloved by his constituents, and there seems to be a little of that both, or a lack of love maybe, both on the left and the right, because Scott Brown, Senator Brown, did actually phone in to WRKO this morning, and he took some heat from listeners there for helping pass this financial reform bill. You know, they said they were asking him, why push it through so fast now? Why not wait until after November when maybe the makeup or the balance of power in Congress might shift a little, when Republicans, you know, could gain some several key seats? So here's how Scott Brown responded on RKO.
When I went down there, Todd, and we've talked about this at length, one of the things you wanted me to do is to get Washington working again. I have a bill that goes from them trying to ram it through in 3 days to going to 10 or 11 weeks. You know, basically redefines a lot of the crazy trading, the banks acting like casino mentality, the Wall Street just loosey-goosey mentality, and we solve a problem, and now what's the problem?
So, Peter Canellos, what is the problem now? I mean, obviously people on the right do see it as a problem. So is that necessarily overall, when you look at who the electorate in Massachusetts is that an issue for Brown come November?
I don't think so. I think that he's running in 2012.
I'm sorry, in 2012. I apologize for that.
But I do think that in 2012 he's better off as a moderate than somebody who would appeal to the extreme RKO listeners. I mean, you know, there's a constituency out there in Massachusetts and elsewhere that is just, you know, angry at the government and feels like any bill that goes through, anything that the government does, somehow gets blamed or associated with the economic decline, and you know this is what the problem is, and we just have to block it. And you know, clearly Brown is not going to be the favorite candidate of that constituency, but he doesn't have to worry in Massachusetts about anyone else claiming that constituency either. They'll just be calling into RKO, I think.
I agree with those points, and there's one other thing that someone has to, you know, we have to keep in mind when you think about 2012. It's a presidential election year, and it's in November. It's a final election in Massachusetts. I don't know about you, but I don't remember the last time a Republican won in Massachusetts. I mean, this is a very Democratic state, especially in that turnout. So he needs to be thinking about who's coming out in 2012, and it's a very, very Democratic constituency.
And I know it is actually quite a long ways away from now, but Susan Tracy, speaking of who's coming out, do you think anyone, given the amount of money Scott Brown already has in his war chest, essentially, that any Republican challenger might try and stand up against him, or even on the Democratic side?
Well, you know, as a Democrat, I will tell you the Republicans are so much better at getting just one candidate out there and staying with them. So it's 2012 is a long way away in the primary, Republican primary. Right now, I would be surprised if anyone would go up against $6 million.
All right. Well, Susan Tracy, former Massachusetts State Representative and President of the Strategy Group, a media consulting agency. Hang in there with us. Peter Canellos, editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Stand by as well. We are talking about the news of the week in review, about financial reform, about job numbers here in Massachusetts, and about a casino bill that we thought would just never die and now actually might be. We'll see what happens. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Join us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It is Friday, and we are having our week in review. We talked about financial reform, a little bit about Scott Brown, and now we're going to talk about the Massachusetts economy and a casino bill. New jobless numbers are out, and the Massachusetts unemployment rate is down to 9%, which still sounds awfully high. So is that good news for the state of Massachusetts? Are you one of those people who's been put back to work, or are you still one of those 300,000 who has not been put back to work? Join us with your thoughts on the economy, on casinos, on any news story that caught your attention this week. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I am joined by Susan Tracy. She's a former Massachusetts state representative and current president of the Strategy Group, a media consulting agency, and also by Peter Canellos, editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Now, on to those new unemployment numbers. As I mentioned, the state shaves 0.2% off our unemployment numbers, and we get down to 9%. Governor Deval Patrick, in an interview with WBUR's Morning Edition host Bob Oakes, said, hey, that's positive news.
The Massachusetts economy is recovering, and recovering at a good pace. We've had 5 months of strong job gains. In this last month in June, it was 3,400 jobs in the private sector. It's coming in all of the key sectors, including construction, which is really great news. Home sales, retail leasing, downtown office space leasing are all up. Business confidence is surging.
Well, Susan Tracy, that's the governor's take on it, but we can also never know how many people just stopped looking for work in Massachusetts. So your assessment as to still being at 9% unemployment?
You know, honestly, I agree with the governor. I mean, the numbers are going down. There's not going to be a magic wand, and tomorrow everyone's going to go back to work. But if I was the governor of Massachusetts and I saw...
In an election year for him.
Yeah, or in any year, quite honestly. If I saw a steady, you know, every month a decrease and increase in jobs, and he's right, I looked at some of the sectors where the jobs increased, it's good. There was a decrease in government sector jobs, so, you know, the Tea Party folks will be glad to hear that. But I agree with him. I mean, you know, that's a good story for him, and that's the direction you want to be headed in.
Okay. Peter Canellos, do you also take this as good news for the state, or maybe ambiguous news?
No, I take it as good news. I mean, I think the fact that the private sector is creating so many jobs in Massachusetts and that we're outperforming the national economy in job creation are very good signs for Massachusetts. There was a kind of joyful, boosterish kind of tone in Patrick's remarks that's going to rankle some people who are out of work. And we don't know what the future is going to bring. So I'm not sure he's right in that suggestion that, you know, everything's coming roaring back. I talked this week to members of the construction unions, and they remain quite concerned, quite depressed, mm-hmm. quite down. So, you know, we've got a long, long way to go. But I do think the gains are real, and that Patrick is justified in touting them.
Well, on the other hand, though, it seems as if the rate of the gain is slowing down, because that's sort of the subset of numbers here that, you know, the state may have added some 3,400 jobs just this last month. It was 7,000 in May and 15,000 in April. So, you know, that doesn't – maybe a lot of people don't feel so confident because of that, Susan Tracy.
Well, I think some of those were one-time jobs that they knew about, right? There were some census worker jobs. So, you know, essentially, I think every month that there's more jobs created than lost is a good month. You know, we're in the worst economic time that any of us remember. So, I don't think there's a magic wand that all of a sudden we're going to have jobs for everybody who's out of work. I think it's good. That's the direction I want to be moving in as a state.
Let's get some calls in here. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bruce is calling from Jamaica Plain. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bruce.
Thanks, Magna. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What's your thought?
Don't the job numbers come from the number of unemployment claims that are filed?
That is correct.
Well, the problem with that is that a lot of people, you know, where Congress has not appropriated funding for extended benefits, a lot of people have exhausted their unemployment benefits and they drop off unemployment. So I think the decline in so-called unemployment is misleading. There's still a large number of people who are unemployed who are no longer receiving unemployment benefits that are invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be another 2 to 3 years before the economy really starts coming back.
Bruce, thank you so much for your call. Let's actually take a caller who maybe is on this exact point. Linda's calling from Holliston. Welcome to Radio Boston, Linda.
Hi, Meghna. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. And it's exactly that. I was laid off 3 years ago. I am working part-time in retail. I had been in software development. Now my skills are soft, and I'm having a really hard time finding a job and making it in Massachusetts. On the other hand, I do think that the governor is doing everything that he can, and I'm so proud that he's been able to balance the budget and start bringing jobs back to Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. So you said you've been out of work or maybe only able to achieve part-time work for some 3 years now, Linda?
3 years, yes, and I am a single parent. I have two children. And because I started working part-time, it seems to have impacted my ability to collect unemployment, so I can't collect unemployment, and I'm one of those invisible people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, actually, on that note, you gave praise to Governor Patrick, but what do you think, you know, he or any of his rivals, because we are coming up to an election season here, could do? I mean, 3 years seems an awfully long time to me, so what do you think you kind of help you might need to get back on your feet for full-time employment?
I probably could use some retraining, and I've had a hard time finding retraining that would allow me to continue to work part-time and retraining that I could afford.
Mm-hmm. Linda, thank you so much for your call. Peter Canellis, editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. You hear a very forgiving voice in Linda from Holliston there, but do you think the same degree of forgiveness is being felt amongst the rest of the electorate in Massachusetts for the governor or any of his rivals for that matter?
Well, that's an absolutely crucial question for this November, and that is, you know, we've seen Charlie Baker run on a platform that sort of says had enough and is kind of portraying everything that's going on in Beacon Hill as being in a state of disarray. Patrick is making a very different statement. He's essentially saying we've got our house in order, we're moving in the right direction, the policies are there, we're moving ahead. Obviously, this woman, despite her own very significant hardships, is willing to give Patrick the benefit of the doubt. If there are many more people like that, I think it's very good news for the governor. On the other hand, if there are a lot of people who will, you know, look at the numbers that Patrick is touting and the programs he's touting and sort of say, you know, despite all that, you know, political talk, what I see in front of me is so bad, I want to change. You know, Patrick could be in trouble. So mm-hmm. So this is what we have to watch going towards November.
Susan Tracy, if I can just move to one last major issue here before we wrap mm-hmm. up today. That casino bill.
You're that one.
Yeah, that one. You are our former state representative here at the table. It seems like there's just about roughly 2 weeks left before the legislative session comes mm-hmm. to a close. It's still in conference committee. Do you think a bill this big is going to make its way out of conference?
I think the only way this bill makes it out is I think there's a need by the Speaker of the House to achieve a win. I think most people understand that the key issue is the issue of slots at the tracks, which the Speaker is very committed to doing. You saw the Senate President isn't supportive of that, the governor, and now you had the Inspector General coming out saying it's a no-bid contract to do slots at the tracks. In my opinion, from a political perspective, the way this bill can progress, and I think the last time I was on this show, I said, you know, it's a long way from now to the end of July, is that Speaker DeLeo needs to get some type of a win on this mm-hmm. issue. Now, the nature of that win, I don't know what it is. You hear the governor talk about compromise, but I think that there needs to be a road for the Speaker to be able to have some victory here.
But on the other hand, Peter Kanellis, the compromise that Governor Patrick seems to be willing to make doesn't have to do with the slots themselves, but maybe the jobs that would have mm-hmm. been created by having slots at racetracks. So does this seem like a no-win situation to you?
Well, no win for DeLeo or no win for the state. I mean, I think that you know, time is running out on this, and this is becoming a big distraction, gambling, and, you know, they have to come to a deal very, very quickly. I don't agree with Susan that DeLeo needs a win here and people have to cater to DeLeo. It's not appropriate for the Speaker.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm not suggesting that you cater to DeLeo. You've got a House and a Senate in a conference committee, and to get a bill out of that conference committee, you're going to have both sides come together. And for both sides to come together, they're going to have to stand together and support it. And to do that, this Speaker DeLeo is going to need to be able to achieve something that he believes is important. Now, it is a jobs bill for him, so I'm not suggesting that it's an all-win for him, but he needs to win something on this.
Well, but that assumes that this gambling bill is absolutely the most pressing thing before Massachusetts right now. I mean, you know, not getting a gambling bill is better than getting a bad gambling bill, certainly from our point of view.
I agree.
Susan, I'm sorry to interrupt here, but it sounds like we're having a similar deadlock that must be going on behind closed doors on Beacon Hill. But we however,
there
don't
we
have
go.
2 weeks. We have 2 minutes to wrap this one up. So as we do on every Friday, Peter Kanellis, you know, we bring our hubbubs to the table, those stories that maybe didn't make it to this conversation. But you got just a couple seconds to share your hubbub this week.
Menino pressuring Vornado Development, which is the developer of the Filene site in Downtown Crossing, but they also own part of Suffolk Downs, saying he's never going to support a casino at Suffolk Downs if Vornado's part of it. That's hardball, but it's kind of effective in Menino's case.
All right. Mm-hmm. Susan Tracy, your hubbub?
My favorite is that the iPhone fix is to put duct tape on it. It's just I know the iPhone is a big story, but the duct tape fix, I think... I really like that one. I think it needs more attention.
It warms the MacGyver fan in me more than I can tell you. Mine is that WBUR is running this series about Boston Harbor, and we just heard a story this week from Sasha Pfeiffer, one of our reporters, about people trying to swim in the Charles River. Of course not. Maybe such a great idea. But then today we also see that 29 beaches along the north and south shores have been closed due to high E. coli bacteria levels. So even in this heat that we're having, closed beaches still. So the story of Boston Harbor continues. Susan Tracy, former Massachusetts state representative and president of the Strategy Group, a media consulting agency. Such a pleasure to have you back on Radio
Thanks.
Boston.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Having me.
And Peter Kanellis, editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Great to have you as always.
Thank you.